This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, the man William Jefferson Clinton, that's the guy that's living in the White House now, called the most dangerous radio host in America. Rush Limbaugh read that on the air from a White House memo when he was trying to deflect the ire of the communist news networks and the liberal press from pouring all of their venom all over his head. And when he did that, ladies and gentlemen, he truly made me the preeminent radio host in this country, the only one that's telling it like it is, the only one who wields the sword of truth and stands by it, documents it, sources it, so that you too can go out and find out what's what and who's who and why everything is happening the way that they are. Make sure you have pen and paper tonight, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm going to be touching on a subject once again that is guaranteed to strike fear into the hearts of the communists and Marxist socialists who are doing everything they can possibly do to destroy this once great nation. I say once great because, folks, we are being relegated to the junk pile, in case you haven't noticed. Our day in the sun has long gone by, and we are soon to become just another third world nation. Our industry has fled to foreign countries. We have a virtual army of immigrants flooding across the borders to dilute the traditions and the political makeup of this country. We are being regulated to death. Congress has passed so many laws, and the states have passed so many laws that nobody even knows what they are anymore. And I guarantee you that as you go about your daily business, you violate at least three or four laws every single day that you don't even know exist. The American citizens have gone off the deep end. They now believe that they have to be the enforcers of laws that don't even apply to them or their neighbors. It is amazing how a once educated, mighty, and free people are being regulated and relegated once again into that old slavery that has plagued the human race since its beginning. And since clever men have found out how to hide the truth and manipulate language and words and technology in order to control others. It began when the first man learned how to keep a fire going and take care of that fire so it wouldn't go out, and thus commanded the respect, admiration, and was granted the leadership of his little group of humans somewhere, probably at the mouth of a cave. Listen to the call and heed it. Seek out and join a militia. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight you're going to hear the truth about militias. And this will strike fear into the hearts of our enemies, I guarantee you. For they fear nothing more than the American people becoming fed up and reclaiming their freedom by whatever means necessary that they have to do it. This is the truth about militias, and it's going to shock you. It's going to surprise you, because nobody on the boob tube in your living room from the Communist News Networks has been telling you the truth about the militias, not one single one of them. You see, words have meaning, ladies and gentlemen. And there is a process which we may use to determine the specific meaning of militia, both in the language and under the law. And many of you will be surprised to discover that you are already members of the militia, whether you want to be or not. It is the law. The 1971 edition of the Compact Edition of the Oxford English Dictionary defines militia as, one, a system of military discipline, organization and tactics, manner of conducting warfare, the arts of war. Two, the control and administration of the military and naval forces of a country. Three, a military force, especially the body of soldiers, in the service of a sovereign or a state. In later use, employed in more restricted sense to denote a citizen army, as distinguished from a body of mercenaries or professional soldiers. 4. B. in the United States, and I quote directly from the definition in the dictionary, the whole body of men declared by law amendable to military service without enlistment, whether armed and drilled or not, end quote. Militia, to call out as militia, militiaman, a member of a military force. Black's Law Dictionary, ladies and gentlemen, and you have to go to the Law Dictionary in every instance where you're dealing with the meaning of words under the law, because words, as you use them as your everyday communications with the people that you know, do not have the same meaning that they do in a courtroom. So Black's Law Dictionary further defines these terms, and bear in mind that words have meaning, specific meaning. Under the law, the words may not mean what you think. Also, you will note in the following definition that the militia is not subordinate to the state or any other body. The body of citizens, in fact, constitute the body of authority to which the militia answers. And here's the definition. Militia, the body of citizens in a state enrolled for discipline as a military force, but not engaged in actual service except in emergencies, as distinguished from regular troops or a standing army. That comes from State versus Dawson, 272, NC 535, 159, SE 2nd 19. Militiaman comprehends every temporary citizen soldier who in time of war or emergency enters active military service of the country. Critchlow versus Monson, 102, Utah, 378, 131, P. 2nd, 794, and 798. Those are references, folks, in case you don't know what all those numbers and sites are. References so that you can look this up in the law books. The first United States document in law, ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know it, is the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, commonly known or referred to as the Declaration of Independence. It sets out the reasons and justifications for our separation from England and the Revolutionary War that followed. The document places the decision and the power in the hands of the people, not in the hands of any government, and was clearly meant to be enforced by the militia, a citizen's army. That army, the first army in this country, was the Continental Army of the Republic. That army, made up of militias, won our independence. And the Declaration of Independence, ladies and gentlemen, clearly states that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Our founding fathers were experienced dealing with despotic governments. Almost everyone who came to this country in the beginning, or to these shores, it wasn't a country, it was a vast wilderness, were escaping some kind of persecution or tyranny that existed in what they called the old world of Europe. And so it becomes much clearer when you understand where they came from and what they wrote. And this is just one of the things. But this is a document in law. It is the founding document in law upon which this nation rests. Our founding fathers discussed the meaning and purpose of the militia frequently. I suggest you read the whole of the Federalist Papers, number 24 through number 34. There you will find a complete argument for the militia as a citizen's army, consisting of the whole of the people, designed to allay the public fears of a despotic central government. The following statements, among many others, may be found. Quote, if the representatives of the people betray their constituents, there is then no resource left but in the exertion of that original right of self-defense, which is paramount to all positive forms of government. Federalist Papers, number 28, section 8, end quote. End quote. It may safely be received as an axiom in our political system that the state governments will, in all possible contingencies, afford complete security against the invasions of public liberty by the national authority. End quote. Federalist Papers, number 8, section 8. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the Constitution for the United States of America is the supreme law of the land. It recognizes the militia as an already existing force outside the control of the federal government, but allows for the Congress to call forth the militia for only three very specific occurrences. The militia cannot be called up to perform any other acts outside of the three specifically stated within the document. The militia cannot be called upon to do anything unconstitutional, illegal, or unlawful. Indeed, ladies and gentlemen, the commanders must refuse any unconstitutional, illegal, or unlawful order. The Constitution for the United States of America states in Article 1, Section 8, and I quote verbatim, to provide for calling forth the militia, to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection and repel invasions, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. End quote. Still fearful of an oppressive central government, the states rejected the original version of the Constitution, and most people still don't even know that. They finally agreed to adopt the instrument, but only after pinning further safeguards to protect the individual and the several states. 10 amendments were added, which became to be known as the Bill of Rights. Most people do not understand that these first 10 amendments are not separate from the Constitution, but are, in fact, a part of the Constitution, for that was the only way that the original colonies would accept the Constitution and the Union. The preamble of those first 10 amendments and Article 2 are of extreme importance, and that's putting it mildly. You see, when you see a copy of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, usually in high school, is usually where most people see it, if they ever see it in their life. But in case you run into it in some other place, you will not see the preamble to the first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights, simply because it tells the truth, and nobody wants you to know the truth. Listen to this. This is the preamble to the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, known as the Bill of Rights, which are, in fact, an integral part attached to and a part of that contract between the federal government and the states, known as the Constitution for the United States of America. I quote, preamble, the conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government, will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. End quote. Now, if you understand that, it means the people in the states were afraid that the Constitution still could result in a despotic government. And so they demanded that the Ten Amendments known as the Bill of Rights be penned in order to protect themselves from the government. And what is the most important clause of all of those ten? Because without it, all of the rest could be usurped, could be destroyed, could be thrown in the trash can anytime anybody powerful enough wanted to do it. This is what the Founding Fathers gave us, to allay the fears of the citizens and to ensure that nobody could ever enslave them, to ensure that they could never be subject to a despotic or tyrannical government. It's known as Article 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, end quote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, on all of the copies of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, you will find two commas have been inserted in the second article and amendment to change its meaning. If you look at the original document and the original copies of that document that were first circulated in this country, you will find there are no commas in the second article in amendment anywhere. These commas were inserted to change its meaning or to make interpretation of its meaning, to corrupt its meaning and its purpose possible for the enemies of the Republic. Here's how it reads with the commas inserted now. And I quote, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That enables an interpretation that it does not apply to the people, but to a militia. In the original intent of the Founding Fathers, there were no commas. There are no commas in the original document, a copy of which you can see anytime you go to Washington, D.C. In fact, you can go see the original document, if you wish, and you will see no commas. You will see no commas in the early books and copies of the Constitution and books that contain the Constitution in the early years of this nation, all the way up until the early 1900s. Here's the way the Founding Fathers wrote it. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The meaning is clear. It establishes two things. It establishes, ladies and gentlemen, the right of the people to have a well-regulated militia. It says that this is absolutely necessary to the security of a free state. And it specifically says that the people have a right to keep and bear arms, and that that right shall not be infringed. It is clear. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state is a descriptive clause. The active clause and the meat of the law is the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Because freedom, yours and mine, is ultimately dependent upon the rights guaranteed by all these words, all with specific meaning, it is imperative that we understand the meaning. A militia is an armed citizenry, which according to the American Heritage Dictionary is not a part of the regular armed forces, but is on call for service in an emergency. The Federalist Papers show us that the militia referred to in the Second Amendment is the armed citizenry. It is the right of the people, not the right of any government entity which it protected. The security of a free state clearly presupposes that the state, the citizenry, is free and needs to secure that freedom by defending the Constitution for the United States and the Constitution of the individual separate states. The guarantor of that freedom against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that is the oath I took twice when I entered the Air Force and then the United States Navy. Enemies foreign, ladies and gentlemen, obviously refers to entities or governments not of this country. Enemies domestic can only refer to an entity or government of our country, in effect, a government which would choose to make itself an enemy of the people by depriving its citizens of their constitutionally protected natural rights. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is called tyranny. The primary reason for and purpose of a militia and armed citizenry, a militia available to a government of the people, but beyond the purview of a government against the people, is to secure the freedom of the people against just such a government. The active clause in the second article in amendment is, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state is the descriptive clause, and the meaning, ladies and gentlemen, is clear. Now, the militia, as you have just learned, is a citizen's army, made up of the whole of the people, for the purpose of guarding against betrayal by their representatives. 2. Afford complete security against the invasions of public liberty by the national authority. And if either occurs, it is our right, it is our duty to throw off such a government and to provide new guards for our future security, and that is not all. John Rowland puts it this way. He says, and I quote, some commit the non sequitur that reserving the training of militias and the training of their officers to the states, as provided in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 16, means delegating an exclusive power to the state governments. It is clear from the language and from historical analysis of the development of the Constitution that, ladies and gentlemen, reserving to the states only means the power is denied to the national government. For the framers, our founding fathers, the state was the people of the state, and they made that clear in everything that they ever wrote, not the government of the state. When they wanted to indicate the government of a state, they used a specific language and they called it, quote, legislature of the state, end quote, as they did in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17. It was left to the people of each state to decide what powers, if any, to delegate to their state government for organizing and training militias and for the appointment of the officers. Now, you should have caught on already that the National Guard cannot possibly be the militia because the officers are not trained by the states, ladies and gentlemen. They are trained by the federal government, by the federal military. They are equipped by the federal government. They are funded by the federal government. And they are ruled and controlled and commanded by the federal government, except in times when a state government may call for the National Guard for some reason or emergency within a state. In the absence of such delegation of authority by the people under common law and established practice during the period in which the Constitution was adopted, the authority defaults to local communities, The practice was for militias to be organized by county or township, usually under the authority of the highest elected law enforcement official, such as the sheriff or constable. However, any credible person could call up the militia, as Paul Revere did during his famous midnight ride. Every sheriff's posse, ladies and gentlemen, is a militia. My domicile is in the great state of Arizona, probably one of the most beautiful places upon the face of this earth. I cannot cover the Constitution and statutes of every state in 1 hour, or even 2 hours for that matter, so I will cover Arizona as representative of the average state, and indeed it is. You should make a thorough study of the Constitution and statutes of your particular state, because while most are essentially the same, there are a few states with major differences, such as New York, the Constitution of Arizona, says this, quote, Article 2, Bearing Arms, Section 26, and I quote, The right of the individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired, but nothing in this section shall be construed as authorizing individuals or corporations to organize, maintain, or employ an armed body of men, end quote. That last part comes from the days of the range wars, ladies and gentlemen, when a rancher or a corporation of ranchers or cattlemen would hire armed men known as gunslingers to come and kill people in what they called the defense of their grazing land. Has nothing to do with the unorganized militia or a lawfully constituted militia of the citizens of the state. And here's why. You see, the laws of the state of Arizona are clear. Under Title 26, Article 2, entitled Militia, Section 20, the definition of exempt in the law means prohibited. Prohibited. Those prohibited are the very ones who might betray the people. They therefore cannot be allowed to function as members of the militia, the last refuge of the people against tyranny. I quote from the Constitution of the State of Arizona, The militia of the State of Arizona consists of all able-bodied citizens of the state between the ages of 18 and 45 years, and all residents of the state between such ages who have declared their intention to become citizens of the United States, except 1. Persons exempted by the laws of the state or of the United States. 2. Idiots, lunatics, totally blind persons, and persons convicted of infamous crimes, meaning felonies. 3. Judges and clerks of court of record. 4. State and county civil officers holding office by election and members of the legislature. I hope you all got that. Title 26, Section 26-122, Components of Militia. A. The militia is divided into the National Guard of Arizona, the State Guard when organized, and the unorganized militia. E. The unorganized militia consists of members of the militia, not members of the National Guard or State Guard when organized. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, as defined all able-bodied citizens of the state between the ages of 18 and 45 years, and all residents of the state between such ages who have declared their intention to become citizens of the United States, except those exempted. And ladies and gentlemen, that applies in every state in the Union. Even if there is no militia definition in that state, because the United States of America defines the definition of militia, and we will get to that. You see, most people would stop there. That is, if they even got this far, and I guarantee you most of you listening have never cracked a law book or the United States Code in your life, and so would never have known any of this. You see, there's more. There's a lot more. The United States has a militia definition. It is outlined in the United States Code. We'll use the 1988 edition, Volume 3, Title 10, Armed Forces, which is the most current edition available. Chapter 13, The Militia, Section 311, Militia, Composition and Classes, small a. The militia of the United States consists of all able-bodied males at least 17 years of age and who are or who have made a declaration of intention to become citizens of the United States, and the female citizens of the United States who are commissioned officers of the National Guard. B. The classes of the militia are 1. The organized militia, which consists of the National Guard and the naval militia, and 2. The unorganized militia, which consists of the members of the militia who are not members of the National Guard or the Naval Militia. In other words, every single citizen of the United States of America who are at least 17 years of age and who are or who have made a declaration of intention to become citizens of the United States, and the female citizens of the United States who are commissioned officers of the National Guard. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot more to this militia stuff than you ever dreamed. It goes on to list virtually the same and more exempted persons, and for the same reasons as the state of Arizona. Title 32 mentioned above makes persons who were honorably discharged or who are retired from any branch of the armed forces of the United States of America members of the militia until the age of 64, the maximum age that one may become a member of the National Guard, up until no longer physically or mentally able to serve. You can read all this yourself for a complete understanding. All you have to do is get the sites that I have given you, open to those pages and paragraphs in those titles under the law, and read it for yourself. It is both easier to understand than you think, ladies and gentlemen, and much more complicated than you probably ever dreamed. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this short pause. In case you don't know what that bugle is, ladies and gentlemen, that's the recruiting bugle. And for the first 150 years of this nation, it was heard in every city, county, town, and little village in this nation and in all of the territories. There are many militias. The first is, and always will be, the militia of the whole of the people, armed to protect themselves from betrayal by their representatives and from a government that might become or has become a tyrant. The second, third, and fourth is the militia of the state, the National Guard, State Guard, and the unorganized militia of the several states of the Union and of the United States. The fifth, sixth, and seventh is the United States militia, the National Guard, Naval Militia, and the unorganized militia of the federal government, its possessions, territories, and trusts. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to James Madison, said that, quote, a Bill of Rights is what the people are entitled to against every government on earth, general and particular, end quote. Again, in his first inaugural address, he included among the, quote, essential principles of our government, end quote, a well-disciplined militia and the supremacy of the civil over the military authority, and should we wonder from these principles in moments of error and alarm, let us hasten to retrace our steps and to regain the road which alone leads to peace, liberty, and safety, end quote. In 18 United States Code Service, section 1385, I quote, youth of Army and Air Force as posse comitatus, whoever, except in cases and under circumstances expressly authorized by the Constitution or Act of Congress, willfully uses any part of the Army or the Air Force as a posse comitatus or otherwise to execute the laws, shall be fined not more than $10,000 or imprisoned not more than 2 years or both. That was added August 10, 1956, Chapter 1041, Section 18, small a, 70, capital A, Statute 626, June 25, 1959, Public Law 86-70, Section 17, small d, 73, Statutes 144. We, ladies and gentlemen, that's you and I, all of us together, we the people, the citizenry, have both a right and a responsibility, a duty, individually and collectively, to keep and bear arms in order to defend ourselves against all enemies of our Constitution and the rights and freedoms thereby guaranteed. What kind of arms? Any kind that it takes. Obviously, arms must be kept and borne in a responsible manner in order to serve the constitutionally stated need and purpose. The Second Amendment is not concerned, as some absurdly would suggest, with hunting and sporting rights, albeit those rights exist, along with the right to defend our lives and property. The intent of the Second Amendment is to arm the citizenry to defend itself against every government on earth, foreign or domestic, which would make itself an enemy of the people by violating their constitutionally protected rights. You see, ladies and gentlemen, in this nation, above all others in the world, and probably only this nation, the government is the servant of an armed citizenry. It is the tyrant over an unarmed citizenry. Now, if you don't believe that, just take a look at all the many tragic illustrations of this deplorable state around the world today, where the people do not have such protections under the law, where they do not have the right to keep and bear arms. And I'm going to tell you right now, if this citizenry did not have the right to keep and bear arms, despotism would have taken hold of this country many, many years ago. For many people have tried it already. No government, by the people and for the people, ever need fear the arms of the people. Only a government against the people and their rights needs fear their arms. To lay down our arms is to transfer all power, all control, from the people to the government, thereby destroying, not securing, our freedom, for which once men were willing to die, the price of liberty, as Thomas Jefferson and others have warned, is eternal vigilance. Now, this is not to be construed as an indictment against our present government. However, I would indict a lot of people in government who are subverting it from within, but not as an indictment against our government. For our government is the Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights and all lawful amendments thereto. But vigilance requires that we be ever aware that tyrannies have arisen, both from within and from without, throughout history. That history, indeed, often repeats itself, and that it can, and most probably, and most certainly will, happen here. So, I would ask that all of you arise from indifference. Take a stand for once in your life. Unite. Form militias. And advise your congressmen of your resolve. Remind them that their duty is to serve the people as provided by our constitutionally protected rights will not be tolerated. And don't neglect to thank those congressmen who support and defend our rights, that is, if you can find one. On September 15, 1994, President Clinton, in his speech, praised the patriots of the American Revolution for having taken up arms against a tyrannical government. I wonder if he even knew what it was that he said. I wonder if he knows that he is dangerously close to being another tyrant himself. These days, I wonder if he knows anything at all. For those that he praised, ladies and gentlemen, were militiamen. And in the same breath, he condemns militiamen. It can't be both ways. And under the law, he must support, as president, the law. And under the law, the militia is not only legal and lawful, it is constitutional and, in fact, is recognized by the Constitution for the United States of America as a pre-existing force. Where does this leave us? The report of the Subcommittee on the Constitution of the Committee on the Judiciary, United States Senate, 97th Congress, 2nd Session, February 1982, page 11, states this, and I quote, "The militia refers to a concept of a universally armed people, not to any specifically organized unit. When the framers referred to the equivalent of our National Guard, they uniformly used the term select militia and distinguished this from militia. Debates over the Constitution constantly referred to organized militia units as a threat to freedom comparable to that of a standing army and stressed that such organized units did not constitute and indeed were philosophically opposed to the concept of a militia. That the National Guard is not the militia referred to in the Second Amendment is even clearer today. Congress has organized the National Guard under its power to raise and support armies, and not its power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia." End quote. House Resolution Report Number 141, 73rd Congress, 1st Session, February 5, 1953. This Congress chose to do in the interest of organizing reserve military units, which were not limited in deployment by the strictures of our power over the constitutional militia, which can be called forth only to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. The modern National Guard was specifically intended to avoid status as the constitutional militia, a distinction recognized by Title 10, United States Code, Section 311, small a, end quote. That's what Congress has to say on the subject, ladies and gentlemen. A militiaman is simply any citizen in his capacity as a defender of the community who is obliged to do so within his or her ability, such as the sheriff's posse. Militiahood is a role which citizens may play as the situation requires. It is not a permanent condition. But just as each citizen has a duty to defend the community, he also has the duty to prepare himself to play that role effectively and to join with others in his community to train and to function as organized forces, and the elected officials of his community have the duty to facilitate that organization and training. If those officials fail in their duty, the militiamen must carry on without their participation. The militia can only be called up by the federal government for those things specifically outlined in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution for the United States of America. Militiamen cannot answer a call from the federal government for any other purpose. The militia may be called up by a state governor for many reasons other than those cited in the U.S. Constitution. No militiaman can ever answer any call which would involve him or his militia unit in anything that is illegal, unlawful, or unconstitutional. No militia unit or militiaman can ever accept or carry out any order which is illegal, unlawful, or unconstitutional. If the federal or state government ignores the restraints put upon them by their constitutions and constitutional laws, the militia is obligated. It is their duty to march upon that government and enforce the laws of the state and of the federal government and restore those constitutions as the supreme law of the land. America, ladies and gentlemen, is forgetting its history. It was the militia that created this nation. It was the militia that freed the slaves. The Black Panthers was a militia. It has been the militia that has fought most of this nation's battles, and it has been militiamen that have suffered most of the casualties of this nation's wars. Some of the so-called minorities in this country have also forgotten their history. The Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith has forgotten, or maybe they never even knew, the history of the Jews. It was the militia that fought against Rome. It was a Jewish militia that rose up in the Warsaw Ghetto. It was the militia that protected Jews in Palestine. It was the militia that created the State of Israel. It is the militia that protects the villages and towns and every kibbutz in Israel today. It is the militia called the Jewish Defense League today, right now, this moment, that protects Jews all over the world. But when the Anti-Defamation League rants and raves and foams its anti-militia propaganda from out of its mouth, it never mentions the Jewish Defense League or anything else in Jewish history that could never have occurred without Jewish militias. Jews in this nation are Americans. They are Americans. They have contributed tremendously to this nation. If they live here and if they are citizens, this is their home. And this, their home, was created and sustained over the years by the militia, just as the State of Israel was created and has been sustained and is sustained today by the Jewish militia in the State of Israel. People have a tendency to listen to and believe those who in some shape, manner, or other have convinced them that they are operating in their best interest. When somebody comes to me, folks, and says that whatever they're doing is in my best interest, you know what I want to do? I want to run and hide, because 99 times out of 100, I'm listening to a liar. And he's not looking out for my interest, but he's either going to manipulate me or take something from me. Here's what the Jewish Defense League says. This is a quote from their own literature. Listen to this. Jewish Defense League upholds the principle of Barzel, iron, the need to both move to help Jews everywhere and to change the Jewish image through sacrifice and all necessary means, even strength, force, and violence. The Galut image of the Jew is as a weakling, as one who is easily stepped upon and who does not fight back, is an image that must be changed. Not only does that image cause immediate harm to Jews, but it is a self-perpetuating thing. Because a Jew runs away, or because a Jew allows himself to be stepped upon, he guarantees that another Jew in the future will be attacked because of the image that he has perpetuated. The Jewish Defense League wants to create a physically strong, fearless, and courageous Jew who fights back. We are changing an image born of 2,000 years in the Galut, an image that must be buried because it has buried us. We train ourselves for the defense of Jewish lives and Jewish rights. We learn how to fight physically, for it is better to know how and not have to than have to and not know how, end quote. The Jewish Defense League is a militia. I commend them on what they have done to protect and defend the Jews who have been so persecuted throughout the world, throughout their history. And they're exactly right. And so why is it the Jews in this country now haven't learned the history that has been associated with them? Why is it that they do not understand that if they had militias and were armed in Germany, Hitler could never have come to power and done whatever it is that he did? Why do they want to repeat that mistake in this country by allowing an organization that claims to speak for American Jews in the United States to condemn the militia? It was the militia. that fought against the might of the Soviet Union in Hungary. The militia of the Mujahideen fought them in Afghanistan and kicked the butt of one of the mightiest military forces in the face of this globe. And militias fight the Russian tyranny even today as I speak. I could go on, ladies and gentlemen, for another 100 pages listing the accomplishments of brave militiamen in the fight for freedom throughout the history of the world and upon the battlefields of today. But I must tell you this. If you do not yet understand that no one volunteers to fight on the side of despotism, but only on the side of freedom, another 500 pages would not make a difference in your thinking. Listen to me very carefully, because I'm going to tell you the truth right now, a truth that many of you have never heard. A nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. And such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. You can find that quote in chapter 1 of my book, Behold a Pale Horse. Seek out. Join the militia. Most of you are already members and you've never even attended a meeting. Many of you who are members do not own a weapon, do not have any ammunition, and if you did, wouldn't know how to use it. And I'm telling you right now that if those who would destroy this great nation and create their socialist utopian world government are to have their way, you are going to be called up to fight and possibly die for your freedom. And if I were you, ladies and gentlemen, I would be ready. Good night. And God bless each and every single one of you.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Thank you.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Stay tuned now for all oldies most of the time. Classic radio like you always wished it could be.